And welcome to episode number 125 of the Talking Talkie podcast. Today we're talking about the not so good, the little bit better, and what we're looking for from the weekend. So if we go back to Saturday, what did you feel like going back to Playmore for the first time this season after obviously everything that unfolded last year, Matty?
It was weird, to be honest. I think it's becoming a habit that you go with this sense of optimism, it completely in spite of any previous stuff. You know, I was quite excited, got there nice and early. It was quite busy. I thought, right, here we go. You know, it's all gonna be great. And obviously that was jettisoned quite quickly. But yeah, there's that weird sense of optimism when you start. But yeah, I think we learned quite fast that optimism was misplaced.
Did you feel that going into that game, even after the way that sort of the Dover game had panned out in being a little bit similar to last year, that you were going there still with the same sense of optimism that I think the majority of Torquay fans had, that we should be and we were going to be a side that would steamroller quite a lot of teams in the league?
It's probably that rose tintiness again, but I sort of tried to see that Dover game as, yeah, we dominated them for most of it and then we sort of slipped up, and it's a bit of new players gelling, and it's a bit of sort of it not quite clicking, but it will all fall into place and get home, get some fans behind them, it'll be fine. That was the idea, but it didn't last, obviously.
No, that's it. So I mean, obviously we lined up with pretty much as we expected, you know, the lineup to be. It was three at the back with the two young lads, Craskin Tomlinson and Sean Donnellan. The two players that had played the wide roles for us last season at the end in Stobbs and Collins. Lapsley out again, injured. Obviously, Dawson, we're still missing. So we had Asa and we had Brett McGavin in the midfield with Will Jenkins-Davis behind Ash and Jarvis. Marcus, how did you feel about the lineup? Was it kind of what you expected?
Yeah, it was expected, but still somehow disappointing. I think that it's like Matty touched on there, we all kind of went in with almost a sense of entitlement going into this league because we've got a good squad. We've done the league before. The lineup in itself is not bad. I don't like the formation. I've never liked 3-5-2. It works for some teams, but at this level with these players, it just doesn't. You touched on the wide players there. So, yeah, we had Stobbs and Collins, which were kind of playing a wing-back type role, which is fine. But when they were going forward, they had no support. You know, if you have a 4-4-2, you'd have the fullback or the winger going forward, you'd overlap, you underlap, whatever else. And they would often find themselves on their own, getting crowded up by two players, constantly outnumbered. Quite a lot of times, you would find other players getting frustrated by this. Like, Donnellan would move out wide quite a lot when he's supposed to be in the middle. That would pull central midfielders back. Then you've lost your midfield for a start. Lose the ball on the wing, they're straight through. And it kept happening. So I think that the consensus was that we started with the wrong shape. And for some reason, we continued with the wrong shape. It just didn't. It was obvious from sort of 20 minutes in that it isn't working. And it didn't change. And I think that's what most fans are frustrated about on the day.
It was certainly a sense of frustration that you could feel. And I mean, I was sat in Bristow's bench, and there's a lot of murmurings. There's always been a lot of murmurings, even back to when it was sort of the old grandstand. You're very close to the bench. And I kind of kept an eye on Gary Johnson. I'm just interested in terms of his mannerisms, how he gets his message across to the players during the game. And there didn't seem to be anything that comes from him at all. Whether Downs is you know, deals with the kind of tactics through the game, and Gary Johnson's there as a bit of a rabble rouser, he'll give them a bollocking, he'll give them a well done at half time, that kind of thing. But every message came through Downs. There wasn't a huge amount of messages that came through there, but there was never any attempt to adjust to the way that Worthing were playing. Now, don't get me wrong, Worthing played well, but at no point did we adapt our game to combat the little triangles they were trying to play out from every single goal kick. It felt as if we were thinking, well, if we keep hitting the ball long into Jarvis, sooner or later something will come off.
You're right. And You're right about Worthing. They are a genuinely good side. They're a very, very good side. And I never saw see the day that Joe Felix would be tearing us apart, but he did. You know, they had pacey wingers that, I mean, Joe Felix against Moxie in the second half was almost comical because it was just not happening. Do you want to talk about McGavin or do you want to leave him alone?
I mean, look, I've got three sort of topics to talk about. It was really where the blame lies for the performance. Was it the formation? You know, do we talk about the personnel or are we talking about our tactics? You know, if you've got an opinion to share on Brett McGavin, then
I think that it's purely it's not necessarily my opinion because I think I'd made my mind up on him before, but I think it's a lot of the conversation since has been his performance, and you're absolutely right that not one of those things is to blame, and McGavin himself is not to blame for that loss. There's no getting around that. No one performed well in that side apart from Mark Halstead, I suppose. But you could say that no one had a good game. But a lot of the conversation since has been. You can see what he's trying to do. You can see the cogs turning. You can see that he's trying to do the right thing. But every single pass, it felt like at times, was just not reaching the right man. I mean, he put the most beautiful through ball I've ever seen to their striker in the second half, I think it was. But I think that individual performance became kind of the centre of frustration. But were the personnel to blame? I don't think so, because I think most of that squad improved on Tuesday. I think it was the shape and it was the failure to adapt, I think, was the main problem. We could have nipped it in the bud by sort of 30 minutes in, but we didn't. And we continued to do badly and lost quite convincingly.
Yeah, I think it's very often the case. I assume it's other places, but certainly at Playmore, that fans get on the back of somebody. Somebody is at fault. Somebody is the one that is rubbish, right? And it was Reedy, and it's been other people. And to be clear, McGavin was terrible, but he wasn't the only one. And it gets to a point where if you know we've spent 46 games last season. I imagine he played mid 30s of those, doing that sort of thing. And at some point, you have to start blaming the person who keeps picking him to do the same job. And you know, everybody in that ground could see within 20 minutes that Brent McGavin wasn't really cut out for that game or for that position in that game or whatever. It might be that there is a fantastic player in there. In a certain role or whatever. I'm not really seeing it, but it might be. But the fact that he keeps being asked to do that sort of box-to-box midfield role, which he just clearly isn't capable of doing, at some point, it's cruel. It becomes cruel to keep pushing him out in front of 2,000 fans who all think he's shite and telling him to do the same thing. Because he's a young man, he's away from home, he's clearly not doing it deliberately. He doesn't love being rubbish at football, but he has been rubbish at football in a Torquay shirt. And somebody needs to decide to not pick him or move him on or sign somebody better.
I think we seem to be in a position where we are, for want of a better word, stuck with him because we've given him a contract that is obviously extends into this season. We don't know whether that goes into another season as well. Obviously, something has convinced him to come down here for more than 1 year. I agree with you completely. It becomes cruel on a player who just doesn't have it in the tank to do what he's being asked to do. He's just incredibly slow. Everything he does. I mean, I remember years ago having Brian Healy at Torquay. And everything that Brian Healy did was slow, but there was a reason for it. And you can see the reason for what he's doing. He's trying to be brave and get on the ball a little bit like Armani Little did when everything was Armani Little's fault, you know, the year before last. You know, he's brave. He's trying to get on the ball, but it's, for me, it's just not there. And the difficulty is, we've signed Dawson, who seems to be out for an extended period of time. We have Lapsley and Hall, who are in and out of the side, depending on whether we've played 3 days earlier, whether Ace has turned his knee again, or Lapsley seems to be in and out and in and out and in and out. And in those situations, you know full well that had one more central midfielder being fit, then McGavin doesn't start. I mean, I say that Hansen was on the bench, so which kind of probably shows you all that you need to know about the fact that we haven't been able to move these players on because nobody has come in and said we'd like to take them back, please. I mean, I agree completely, Marcus, with what you've said about the inability or unwillingness maybe to adapt to the way that Worthing were playing. Because from my point of view, I said it the other day that I would have pushed Collins into the midfield and moved. And whether you take off McGavin or you take off Jenkins Davis, I think it was neither of them could have argued had it been them. I would have liked to have seen Dan Martin come in on the left at that point, and Collins could have then added another and added some legs into that midfield as well, because that was the thing that we were screaming out for, was a way of those players getting around the pitch, because you had Aaron Racine, you had the goalkeeper and the other fullback, and they would just pull out as if you as same as if you're watching the Premier League, you know, they were pulling wide, and they just Jarvis and Ash were doing well, they were trying, but there was absolutely no success. And that's where I think Gary Johnson is at fault, particularly in that game, for not giving it a try.
Yeah, and this is gonna bleed a little bit into the conversation about the other game, but two of your best players there are Collins and Stobbs, right? I think in that team. And having them at wing back is a complete waste of their talents, because firstly they've spent their whole career, well certainly Stobbs has spent his whole career as presumably the right of a midfield four or the right of a front three. So it's completely pointless to have him in a different position in relation to his teammates that he's ever been used to. Secondly, they're not going to get in crossing positions as often. Marcus rightly said about having an overlapping or underlapping fullback or whatever. That's absolutely the sort of thing that he would expect. They were having to do all of the running up and down the whole pitch themselves on that side. And that's why we were caught. That's why Moxie was isolated against Joe Felix in the second half every time, because Collins was the other end of the pitch, understandably, trying to do the attacking side of his job. But Moxie can't do that by himself. And yeah, that combined with the fact that our midfielders are not capable of working in that midfield three because they're too slow. As has been said, it felt obvious quite early on that setup, that tactic wasn't appropriate for that game or our squad. And well, they proved it in the result and the performance, really, didn't it?
We were lucky to get away with 3-0, do you think?
Definitely, yeah. Halstead made some brilliant saves. He had a great game.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old... It's the old cliche, if the game carried on for another 60 minutes, what would the score be? Well, it would be 6-0. Like, it was, nothing was improving. Nothing was looking the right way. And we didn't look dominant at any stage in that game. And it was only getting worse as players tired. So, yeah. Yeah, I think we're quite lucky, really.
The last bit to end on was, were there any positives? I think we've sort of covered that with Halstead. But also just a shout out to whoever does the video editing for the highlights, because it did make us look as if that game was a slightly harsh 3-0 when it was only harsh on Worthing that it was 3-0, I think. So whoever's done the video editing for those highlights could be in line for a bit of a pay rise, I think, there. So yeah, then on to last night. Changes to the side after, obviously, with injuries, I think Krask and Moxie, Lapsley came back. You guys were both there, I wasn't. What was the formation? How did we line up for that one?
It looked like a good old 4-4-2 to me, and that's exactly what we needed. You know, we should have been playing that at 3:15 on Saturday, but it's Dan Martin started. That made a huge difference from I think he's ahead of a player, and I think we missed out on him last season. And I think that he'll add a lot this season. I thought he had a very good game. But yeah, it was your standard 4-4-2. I didn't really pay much attention to what formation Chippenham were playing, but it looked roughly 4-4-2. So we had a midfield again. Lapsley certainly helped that, because although he doesn't always do everything right, he's got energy and he will throw himself into absolutely everything. Hall went off fairly early. And But, you know, I think that the midfield was night and day from Saturday. The performance overall, which I'm sure we'll get on, wasn't quite there from what we need. But it was good to see such an improvement in 3 days and such a change in tactics, because it definitely worked.
How was Will Jenkins-Davis? Because obviously, having been hauled off after 45 minutes on Saturday, as an 18-year-old on loan, he could have been quite sort of forgiven for going into his shell a little bit. But how did he stand up when he came on for ATA?
I was in the bench last night, and I spent about 5 or 10 minutes just watching him, actually. As you can do, it's a lovely view up there, and you can sort of see the pitch a bit better. And it looked like he was playing the simple pass more often than not, but he was very, very often asking for the ball, going short to Halstead or to the centre-back, saying, give me the ball. And to be honest, he wasn't playing raking passes, he wasn't cutting them open, but he's an 18-year-old kid who's had, I don't know, it wasn't at Dover, but he had a very poor game on Saturday. And I don't blame him for feeling a bit of pressure and not wanting to take risks. And he is energetic and he runs hard and he, I think, has a little bit of ability on the ball. And he did all right. It wasn't fantastic, but he did all right. And I think I can see potential there in a way that some of our other midfielders, I can't see that as much. So I was quite impressed, really, with how he adapted the game, especially, you know, he's been told he's not starting. That's going to be a blow for him. And then to suddenly be pushed into the game, what, 15, 20 minutes in. It's a good effort to play 70 minutes in those conditions. And, you know, in a crowd that was at time a little bit hostile, a little bit uncomfortable to play in front of, I think he did all right.
Yeah, obviously it took a little while to get the breakthrough. There seemed to be a sense of frustration. I was listening to the game. There seemed to be a sort of a growing sense of this kind of tended to end 1-0 to the opposition last year. But through that perseverance, and one of the players who came back into the side, who I do owe a bit of an apology for, because I'd written him off as being poor last season. I mean, eyesight issues will probably not have helped his cause. But having come back into the side to start and end a move and show real desire and to come in and actually lead a back line, because I guess sort of Donnellan having slipped out wide and having essentially a first year pro next to you, it sounded very much like Ross Marshall really, really stepped up last night.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he had a cracking game. It's probably the best I've seen him play overall in terms of an individual performance. But yeah, I think that we're still missing something in defence. I think that Ross Marshall is probably our best hope at the moment in terms of centre-back. Tomlinson looks bright. You know, he's probably a bright prospect, but I would rather have an experienced centre-back there, obviously, but then who wouldn't? But no, he was very good. And like you say, he took his goal very well. It was a hell of a header from quite some distance out. So whatever eyesight issues he had, he doesn't have now, surely, because it was a cracking goal. It was a striker's finish, without question.
Yeah, there was obviously a player there. We've gone to Stevenage and we've paid money for him. Obviously after a bit of a rocky start, how did you view it, Matty?
Yeah, it was really good. The goal was fantastic. You know, sort of intercepting a move and then starting a new one off himself on the halfway line, getting on the end of a good cross. Lovely header, he sent bottom corner, and he looked composed all night. Really, he sort of. Few balls sort of in behind the right back, and he just sort of collected it up, you know, pushed the man off the ball and sorted it out. He played really well. I think we need to be a little bit careful about, you know, make sure we don't rewrite history. And there were times where he looked okay last season, but he also was a massive liability in some games. You know, he watched the ball over his head twice at Dorking, and he got sent off once or twice. And, you know, I think that's the thing about him, is that he can probably do quite often 6 or 7 out of 10, but every 5 or 6 games, he's going to get a 1 out of 10. He's going to cost you a game. Last season, happy to swallow that at the minute, he probably is our best hope at centre back. I agree. Tomlinson looks all right, but you know, how far can you trust him against a big guy? I'm not really sure. Moxie's out. Krask is out, and again, Krask got the same problem as Tomlinson. I think Marshall, if he's fit enough, he had looked like he had cramp at the end yesterday and went off after about 80 minutes. But yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Ross Marshall does look like our main hope at the back.
I mean, I think it's one of those that I don't think, and from Saturday, from probably from the Dover game as well, I don't think you can afford, especially at this stage of the season when you're trying to forge a path towards the top end of the league, that you can afford to have the two young lads playing at centre-back. I think it's a lot to ask of Krask and Tomlinson, especially when you've got Sean Donnellan, who, I mean, where does he play? He was signed as a central midfielder. He played most of last season at right-back. He moved into the middle. I don't think anybody really knows where his best position is. So to have him alongside two kids at the heart of the defence, when you are going to be playing against some brutes and some players who are slightly less cultured, I think Ross Marshall is probably, like you say, it is the hope that he will be able to be the guy. And ideally, we're going to have more possession, we're going to have more chances, and the ball is going to spend far more time at the other end of the pitch. And therefore, as long as Ross Marshall has got the concentration, you would hope that he wouldn't have to do too much of the last-ditch defending that he had to do last year.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And actually, he passed the ball really nicely last night as well. You know, we were a bit less hoofball, I thought, for parts of the game anyway. And he took the ball off Halstead a few times and, you know, started some moves as well as the goal. And yeah, he looked pretty good. Yeah, he's 7 out of 10.
So, Marcus, having worked very, very hard over the course of a long period of time to earn the lead, we held on to it for, what, about 2.5 minutes?
Yeah, that was a bit of a weird one. Again, I don't think it took too many people by surprise because we're so used to it recently. But it was weird. It was like we scored the goal and then every bit of the player's body language just said, job done. And we just kind of just switched off instantly. It was really, really weird. They ran straight through us. I don't remember much about the specifics of the goal, to be honest with you. I just remember seeing it go in and, you know, hanging your head like everyone else did. But that was kind of typical of last season. And I really, really don't want to see that again. I mean, obviously, we did well to get one back again, but it was really weird. It was a really weird reaction to a goal. Not welcome at all.
Is there a mentality thing? Because, like you say, it did happen a number of times last season. You know, is it the players saying job done? Is there something sort of in the psyche that's thinking, well, we've worked really hard to get the goal, and then they just kind of sit back?
I hope not. I think we need to be very careful about. Going into the season, the thing we probably need to be the most careful about is complacency. And that switching off after the first scoring the first goal reeks of complacency. And we cannot be doing that at all. We've seen already, even in the first three games, that this league is much better than the one we won a few years ago. I think the quality of the teams, I know we've only seen three of them, but it's better. So we cannot go in to this season or any game expecting to win it. And we can't sit back after doing one good thing, essentially. So I hope it's not a mentality thing, and I hope that if it is, it goes very quickly. I think we need to be focused and professional with stuff like this. We cannot afford to sit back because, unlike maybe a few years ago, pretty much every single team in this league will punish you for it.
Hopefully you're right then. Hopefully it's not. I mean, obviously, with being 2-0 up at Dover and then a goal up last night, it's one of those things that, you know, it's there. But you would have to hope that we're able to stamp it out pretty quickly. I mean, obviously, there was then 11 minutes of stoppage time, if we sort of skip right to the end. Fair?
No, I don't think so. It didn't feel like that to me. It didn't feel like they were... I mean, there was a bit of time wasting, but it didn't feel like they were taking the mick too much. But, you know, whatever the referee says, they weren't, you know, in the second half, I can't really even think of, there was nobody down for a long time. You know, a couple of people went off injured, but there was no long stoppage. It was sort of on a regular last season before these, you know, these new rules came in, you'd say 4 or 5 minutes, thanks very much. And I couldn't make sense of it, but obviously it sort of works in our favour.
Are there any, I know that I'm aware of the new rules that are dictating stoppage times now. Are there any specifics to it, or are they basically just saying to refs, be liberal?
The only thing I know is that if a player has treatment, they have to go off for 30 seconds minimum.
Yeah, which didn't happen.
And then the referee, it's now rather than, it used to be 30 seconds per substitution. It's now however long that substitution takes.
Yeah, so that's my understanding is that they are going to time those things rather than being approximate about it, which makes sense. And there was, to be fair, their centre forward did take the mick on the way off. He sort of started walking towards the dugout when clearly he could have gone off at the side and that sort of thing. But as I say, it didn't seem like anything out of the ordinary necessarily. But yeah, I do think the rule is basically every time the ball's not in play, pretty much, the ref's going to, you know, have a little look at his watch and sort of add it up and approximate it. And then, weirdly, at our level, tell our kit man or somebody to do the board.
Yes, it was one of the guys off the bench because there's no fourth officials in the National League
it's
South.
It's a great level to be playing football at, isn't it, really?
Well, we forgot completely against... who did we play on Saturday again?
Worthing.
Worthing, that's the one. They forgot completely then, didn't they? Because we weren't informed of any additional minutes. There was no board.
No.
It just kind of happened. There wasn't a fourth official there and no one remembered that there wasn't.
No one bothered. It's good.
I mean, I will run back to the officials in a minute. But, I mean, obviously, Marcus, do you want to talk us through the winner if you watched that goal?
Yes, I did. It was a lovely, as I remember it, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was Ash made a lovely run sort of down the right of the box, which he did quite a few times, actually. His footwork is very nice. He's clearly confident with it. Fired it low across the deck and Jarvis just kind of sprung out of nowhere and hit it top right. It was a lovely finish, but it was even nicer to see so much cohesion between the two, despite not playing for so long. I think that quite a large part of our success in this league will depend on those two's partnership. So if they can strike that up early and keep it going, then that's very good because I think they're a really, really good partnership. And that goal kind of proves it, really. And it can only get better from there.
What was the view on Jarvis within the ground? Because there was a bit of talk. I mean, I was following some of the chat. There was a bit of talk that he didn't look great. He wasn't putting himself about like the Jarvis of last season and was absolutely knackered after about 70 minutes.
Well, it looked like he was injured. I think it's been said in a post-match interview or something that he had a dead leg for about an hour. Certainly in the second half, excuse me, he was, let's say he was picking his runs carefully. And I think by that, what I mean is he was walking around quite a lot, but you know, when the ball was wide, he was making a run into the box. But I think, he definitely had a word with Ash because Ash was doing a lot of the running up front in the second half. And, but, you know, that's sensible game management, isn't it? Right. I'm sorry. I think I'm better off on the pitch because I think I can do something for this team. And let's be fair, he clearly is looking at our bench. But I can't do everything. You know, next week it might be you who's carrying a knock. I'll do your running then. Put a ball on the spot for me and I'll put it away. Thanks very much. And it was brilliant. And on Ash, he didn't have a brilliant game and he didn't have a brilliant game on Saturday. But you can tell there's a player in there. And he will have his day, I think. I know he's not scored yet and stuff, but he has got decent feet. He is relatively fast. He works hard. There will come a moment where he's very important for us and he's scoring big goals for us, I think. He looks a serious player, certainly at this level.
I really like his confidence on the ball.
Yeah.
He's not afraid. Even in a game on Saturday where we were under the cosh for quite a bit of it, there was no way that you should have the kind of confidence he had because I think he sort of brought a ball down with a back heel once in the second half. He's not afraid to showcase his skills, even if things aren't going brilliantly. And I like that because in a game when things are a bit tight or things aren't quite going for you, Jarvis did the same thing last season where he'd pick up the ball 35 yards out, he'd carry it 2 or 3 yards and he'd smash one into the top corner. And I like that Ash has got that, you know, a similar confidence to him as well. That he's happy to kind of go, well, even though things aren't quite going for us, I'm still pretty confident in my own ability, which was really nice to see. Before we move on to Saturday, how have you found the officiating at both games? although we were pretty hideous on Saturday, I was a bit disappointed, really, I think, with some of the decision making. But in terms of what I was expecting from the level, I didn't think it was too bad.
Yeah, I think it was basically fine. And you're right, it's about what you'd expect. Made a few mistakes, obviously. Who doesn't? Saturday was okay. I think it was basically fine. I think there was a lot of frustration from the pup side on Tuesday night for the linesman. His offside decisions were questionable. But again, there weren't any howlers. There was nothing particularly of note, I don't think. We had a red card on Tuesday night, which was absolutely correct because that bloke was being an idiot. You can't do a two-footer challenge twice in a row in a book and expect to get away with it. But yeah, basically fine, I think. There's no complaints.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I think I did see a bit of abuse for the referee on Saturday online and stuff, and that was a bit harsh, really. I could see she was given a lot of yellows for things like dissent and things like kicking the ball away, which, as we know, or certainly people who watched the mind-numbingly boring thing with Howard Webb on Friday Night Football last week will know, they've been told to do, right? They've been told to book someone if they're dissenting, if they kick the ball away in any way, they get booked. And she did that. The one last night didn't do that. I mean, I don't know which one was refereeing better under those circumstances. I'm tempted to say that she was. The lino in front of the pop side on Saturday got abuse, obviously. They probably get abuse anyway. I didn't leave either game thinking that anyone was hard done by in terms of decisions. I thought a couple went the wrong way in both games, but that's going to happen. It's the level. And also, I'm watching it supporting Torquay, wanting decisions to go my way. And I'm sure Chippenham and Worthing had similar things their way. And I think it was any criticism was blown out of proportion a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think either. Go on.
You touched on the new rules there, you know, the new rules about dissent and things like that, and how one ref paid attention, the other one didn't. Do you remember last season when this new rule came in that if you were a sub, you'd go to the closest touchline? And for the first 3 weeks or so, refs were really hot on it. And then by about sort of October, November, they're completely forgotten. So I wouldn't mind betting that would be the case with dissent, with kicking the ball away, with probably the added minutes as well. You're going to get, over this season, especially with so many new rules, you're going to get a lot of inconsistency this season. And we as fans have to learn to accept that because it's not going to change.
You know, I think in a sort of crude way, it would be good for us if they forget that, because Jarvis, every time a foul's given against him, he has a go. And he was doing it on Saturday and he was lucky to only get one booking. Lapsley always we know is completely in the ref's ear. And actually, there were times on Saturday where I was quite frustrated by how our players, instead of pulling themselves by the bootstraps and getting on with it, were moaning at the ref when she had clearly booked people for moaning at the ref. And if they do carry on with that rule, which I think they should, because it's important, I think, to clamp down on some of these things that you know, with a whole, you know, 10 players crowding the ref, it's not what you want to see. If they do carry on with that, we need to be really careful. Some of our players need to have a proper look at how they behave, because last season and this season, you know, there are times where they could have received two yellows for dissent.
Well, I think Jarvis has been booked in both of the home games, hasn't he, for moaning and arguing.
Yeah.
And it's, if like you say, if it is going to be something that continues, then it's not going to be long before he's going to have an enforced rest through, you know, having a game suspension. Now, I don't know really know where we go with that, because we haven't got anybody that's going to come in and replace him and you know, and do anything there. And like you say, you know, Lapsley as well is renowned for his constant chat, and the number of times I would have booked him if I'd have been a referee. And you sit there and watch him and you think, you just know it's a matter of time. You know, the club have started doing the, you know, you can win a pint of cider for the first goal. You could do the same thing for Lapsley's booking for back chatting the referee.
Lapsley would go out of business, though, wouldn't they, if it did that? That's the problem.
I know. he does need to wind it in a little bit, because he misses enough games through injury that to miss another three or four through, he's likely to pick up a red card through the season, and he's likely to get 10 bookings. So to miss four or five games through suspension is not acceptable when you know that those rules have come in. you would hope that the management team will have a word. You've got to pick your moments there.
It's for different reasons, obviously, but we need to adapt. It's all about adapting and changing, and whether that's, you know, formation or tactics or attitude, you know, we need to accept it. It's not changing. It's not going anywhere. And like you say, if we've got too many good players out on suspensions all the time, it's only going to hurt us. We need to do absolutely everything we can to get out of this league. And if one of those is not shouting at a ref for 90 minutes on a Saturday, that's actually pretty easy.
And we should be good enough to win the league without that bollocks. We don't need to convince people to give us a free kick. We should just be able to play teams off the park, hopefully. And, you know, it's a waste of time anyway, but it certainly should be a waste of time when we don't need to sort of out-dirty other teams or wind up people or whatever. Just go and win the game. Man for man, we'll be better than most teams in this division, certainly in our front six or whatever. So just go and do that and stop moaning and you know, focus on what's important.
With that in mind, do you think that the first three games have been really disappointing, or do you think they've been a really good reality check for the players who will now probably have to look at it and go, it's going to be a bit harder work than we thought it was going to be? So it's a sort of fight or flight mentality.
I think it's far better than 3-1-0 wins. I think that it's certainly, obviously, if we'd gone into the first three games and batted everyone 4-0, then yeah, okay, fine, that's good, but it doesn't help the whole complacency thing. A narrow win wouldn't help it. I think it's for the at least short to medium term, it's probably a good thing. I think Saturday against Worthing really, you know, gave us a reality check, which I'm glad if that's going to be the reality check, I'm glad it's happened now and not in mid-October. I think it all depends on the response, doesn't it? And Tuesday was a good start. So I think as long as we respond well, then it's got to be a positive.
Agree. Is there anything else that either of you have got to say over the first couple of games, or are you happy to move on and have a look at St Albans?
I think just quickly, we do need to sort of remember that we weren't that good last night. Like that, there's a hell of a lot of improvement that needs to happen if we're gonna be in the top two of this league. And yeah, that's just a note that I made before I came in. I need to say that Chippenham weren't very good. They're okay. They weren't very good. We're going to play far better teams than that, and we can't be so wasteful with our leads. And even at the end, even in the, you know, after we scored, they had a couple of attacks. They had a free header in the box, and we need to be so much tighter at the back, and we need to look after the ball better if we're going to seriously challenge in this league. And hopefully, as you say, it was right. We've had a crap weekend. Let's just scrape through this, take 3 points, start the momentum. Hopefully that's what it is. It might be that we're just going to be a team that wins and loses and ups and downs and finishes mid-table. I hope not. I don't think so. But I'm also not entirely... I wasn't entirely thrilled leaving the ground last night, to be honest.
No. I think that there was a certain element of we got away with that. And Tuesday night was about 60% of the required level, probably 50 to 60%. Nowhere near where we were when we won the league last time. Nowhere near. But like I say, I think the improvement of between Saturday and Tuesday, if that could be multiplied over the next 4 to 6 weeks, then we'll be just fine. It all depends on if we keep building. If we stagnate at the level that we play on Tuesday night, then you're right, we're heading for a sort of a eighth or ninth finish, something like that. So, you know, we need to build on it, continue building. And if we keep improving, then we'll be fine. If we stay at that level, then we won't be.
Fair enough. So, yeah, on to Saturday, which is St Albans away. St Albans obviously were the losing playoff finalists from last year. They won one and lost one of their first two games. And as my own research and not Matty's at all will tell you, they're at home to Havant and Waterlooville this evening. The only game I watched was their game last season, which was their playoff final against Oxford. If they play how they played against Oxford, I'm absolutely not worried in any way whatsoever. And I think we'll come away with a very comfortable win. The fact that they got to the playoff final would suggest that they are far better than they put up the showing in that one game. I know they've got Sean Jeffers as one of the best forwards in the league. How are we expecting this one to go, Matty?
I've got no knowledge. To be honest, I've forgotten they're in the playoff final. So fair play. Listen, we should go there and beat them. I tried to look up their team. There weren't any names that I recognised. We should beat them because they're St Albans and we're talking United. And I know that level of complacency is and that level of entitlement is the reason that we're in this position in the first place. But we should beat them, shouldn't we? Go on.
There's one player you should recognise.
Go on.
Ben Wyatt is playing for them.
Is he really? I predict Ben Wyatt. Blimey.
Yeah. Well, you must have glazed right past him.
There he is. He's on the bench tonight, I note. And they're beating. I mean, it won't be relevant to people listening to this tomorrow, but they're beating Havant 1-0. I mean, I'm not afraid of Ben Wyatt, sorry, to be clear.
He's gone from not being able to get into our side to not being able to get into the St Albans side. So, make of that what you will.
I'd like to think he will be able to beat him a couple of times.
I think that he would probably have been offered a deal had Dan Martin not... I mean, I don't know whether he was offered a deal, actually. It may have been that he wanted to move closer to home because I think he's from the greater London area. But I think, given the choice between Ben Wyatt and Dan Martin, I would like to think that Gary's probably got this one right.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And based on Tuesday, after so long of not seeing him, then yeah, I'm full of promise for Dan Martin. I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, it was really nice actually to see him get a start. Actually, I think he said himself first start in 11 months. If that's the first game back, then that's probably the worst he's going to do. So yeah, it's really 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 nice and really promising to have him back as well.
Yeah, I thought Dan Martin did really well, and he put a couple of crosses in. He got up and down the wing, and he looked good. He was tired at the end. He was blowing, and it was right to take him off. Even though it was for Dylan Crowe, it was right to take him off. And I do worry a little bit about injuries generally for us. I do think that there's a lot of players either carrying an injury or getting injuries. Asa Hall is going to be a massive blow, and I do sort of wonder how our injury list is so long so early, and sort of where the pre-season is and where the condition is and how a player is getting cramp in the second week of the season. It doesn't feel great to me. We're going to go into Saturday, I think, with 6 or 7 injuries, which it doesn't fill me with confidence. And I wonder if Marshall and Martin would have started if those other players were injured. But yeah, we'll go with what we've got. And I think if we stick to 4-4-2, we should be all right. Presuming everyone is fit. Apart from Asa, that started on Tuesday.
I've sort of given up ever worrying about the injury list because A, we know it's always going to be relatively extensive, and B, no matter how many times he's asked, you're never going to get any information out of Gary in his lovely Thursday press conference with all the flowery questions from Dom and people. He doesn't give anything up in terms of the injury list. You occasionally might get it's going to be another 2 months before Dawson's back or what have you. You just tend to wait until 2:15, and then all of a sudden, having been out for 3 weeks, Lapsley turns back up in the side. We'll hear nothing, and then one Saturday in October, you'll find Dawson on the bench.
Yeah, it's mad. I don't understand. I just don't get it. I sort of broadly understand the idea of keeping the opposition guessing, but there's a difference between that and telling us what sort of injury someone's got when they're clearly going to be out for 3 months. And somebody who, by the way, is more than willing to talk to people, as I understand, in the pub at half time, like what his injury is, and he's going to be out for ages. But it won't be said by the manager. It's silly. Sorry, I have taken us off on a tangent there, but I do think that injuries are a problem, particularly when we've got such a thin squad as it is.
So yeah, I think that pretty much covers everything that we were looking to discuss. So unless there's anything else from you guys.
Well, come on the Lionesses, obviously, is the end of the business, is get behind the women on Sunday.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I watched the game today, it's fantastic.
Brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah, really, really good. Fills you with joy.
It does, and it's a far cry from watching any kind of men's football, and I really really enjoyed watching it, and yeah, it'd be really nice to see them get over the line on Sunday. So thank you very much to Matty Hayward.
Thanks both.
And thank you very much to Marcus Arscott.
Thank you.
And that has been episode 125, and we will speak to you again soon.